Hello and welcome back to another edition of Rant Money, Burning Edges. We have a wonderful guest today, a dear friend, a golf fan. He's got his Masters hat on. Sam Hutchison is going to be joining us today, along with Mr. Capsch, Mr. Chisholm, and yours truly, Jack Turner, here to break down the Players' Championship. Great tournament, best tournament of the year. Then we're going to talk, you know, looking forward to, okay, what are we excited about for the rest of the season? We still got four majors to go. The fifth major, as the Players' Championship conglomerate would like you to think of it at least, but is behind us. And then we're going to also talk a little bit about Netflix, Full Swing. We're here, we came, we're prepared with notes. We're going to walk through the show, things we liked this year, players we learned more about and we're rooting for, maybe some players that we think less of. Just going to dive deep into it. And then we're going to get Hutch's take on a guy that's been to a few different golf tournaments, played a lot of golf in his life. What makes a great golf course? And so, yeah, we're gonna just dive into it all today. Caps, before we get into that, why don't you tell the people a little bit about our favorite sponsor, our favorite company, out of Austin, Texas, Headsips.
Yeah, folks, there's a little company quickly coming up the ranks. You might see them in the TikTok shop. You might see them on Instagram. You might see them in person if you're ever down here in Austin, Texas. But they came up with a little concept about a year or two ago called the Hydra Lamp. It's not only a very, you know, eco-friendly and let's be honest, a fiscally responsible decision to be made, you know, when it comes to interior furniture and design within your home, your office, the bedroom. It's also going to be able to get you hydrated. Right? You might be a little bit hungover. Maybe you're just trying to wake up and get that 40 in, right? We're not brown bagging it anymore. Or at least, you know, that was for yesterday, St. Patrick's Day. That's over now. We got 364 days that we get to hydrate up and prepare for the next one. What better way to do that? Start fresh right there in the morning. Maybe you need to catch up. You know, you had a nightmare and you realized, oh, I didn't get, you know, I didn't get all my water intake in for today. I'm gonna roll over and I'm gonna hit this little button. Not even have to get out of bed. I don't even have to take off the blankets. Right? You're staying cool. You're staying warm. Whatever you want to do, you're hydrated.
You see a product like Headsips, and you know that we're living in the future.
Yeah, it's one of those things that just it's the ingenuity that really, truthfully, it won us the war. You know, that and decentralized command. Worth talking about, worth thinking about.
There you go.
Check them out.
Let's do it. Woo! Fellas, best tournament of the year, the Players' Championship. Scottie Scheffler makes history. He goes back-to-back. We're here, like I said, joined with a special guest, dear, dear friend, Sam Hutchison, also known as Xander Schauffele's number one fan in Texas. We're going to talk about Xander, too. We're going to talk about, you know, the whole tournament. But I think Scotty's probably the lead here. We talked last week, Caps, about how the way he's playing, if he can continue to putt, he'll be able to go back-to-back and not only, you know, tournaments, Arnie to the Players, but also be the first person in the Players' history to go back-to-back. What impressed you the most about, you know, Scotty's performance this week? What were your takeaways besides the fact that this guy's really fucking good at golf?
Yeah, I think mine is actually, I saw this in a tweet earlier from Data Golf. Or it was actually the No Laying Up guys put this one out. Over the last 2 years, strokes gained from the fairway. This was one of those stats where we really highlighted driving accuracy and the ability to put shots next to the pin on the green were going to be what separated good from great. And that's exactly what Scotty did, firing that 64 on Sunday. Strokes gained from fairway from 50 to 100 yards, 99th percentile, from 100 to 150 yards, 99th percentile, from 150 to 200 yards, take a guess, 99th percentile, over 200 yards, strokes gained from the fairway, he is 96th percentile. The dude, if he is hitting his driver well, he's putting the ball in the fairway, he's going to dominate any tournament that he plays in. But even when he's from the rough, if he's under 150 yards coming out of the rough, he's the 90th percentile strokes gained. And if he's over 150 yards out and he's in the rough, he's actually the 98th percentile. So I don't know. Not what it is. Holes. I don't know. Yeah, like like, what are we doing in a world where we're allowing this man to be in the fairway, right? We need to start creating other obstacles. I don't know what is his putting routine has changed up, other than, like, obviously the putter change, like, stepping away from a blade has done him wonders. You see that happen with a few other guys I mentioned yesterday, like Will Zalatoris has looked a little better around the greens. Justin Thomas has improved a lot around the greens when he stepped away from the blade. I think the biggest thing for everybody else is, can we allow PGA Tour professionals to stand idly by and watch Scotty use technology to his advantage in a way that is making him the greatest golfer since probably Spieth, maybe Jay Day? They had a couple of big runs.
Yeah, I mean, when you say those things, I just imagine going out on the golf course, and let's say you need to lay up, or a situation where, like, let's pick a number to try and hit from. Just imagine being the best of the world from literally any number you pick. You can't go wrong. It's just unbelievable. No. Hutch, what are your thoughts on Scotty? I know some people might say he's not the most electric personality, but I love the guy. I think he's very endearing. I think he's very himself. Seems like a great guy. Probably not, you know, in the back alley with the Perkins waitress, but that doesn't make him any less of a golfer. So what are your thoughts on Scotty?
Yeah, I know he's your favorite golfer, and I texted you, I think it was on Friday, I said, or maybe it was Saturday, I said it was me versus you this week. You know, I'm a Xander guy, you're a Scotty guy. And it's tough to go against Scotty, man. He is Mr. Consistent. I think he's, I don't want to say he's Tiger-esque because no one's Tiger, but I think he's the closest thing we've had to Tiger, you know, since he sort of had his fall off. I had a sort of sense of relief, I think it was Friday on hole three. When you saw him on the tee box, he was getting his neck rubbed, and then he was grabbing his neck. He was grabbing his neck the rest of the round. You're like, finally, this guy isn't going to be in the top five this week. Somehow he pulls away with it. You know, I saw an interesting stat. I was looking into this a little earlier. He's won 8 out of his last 48 tournaments. That's impressive to do in the PGA Tour, especially, you know, in a field like the Players. And, you know, speaking of the Players, the PGA Tour, they needed an event like the Players this past weekend. They've been off to a big time struggle this year, and we really needed a leaderboard like we had this past weekend, where you had the Xander Schauffeles, the Scotties, the Wyndham Clarks, all those big names at the top of the leaderboard, and, you know, four guys within a shot of the lead is just exactly what the tour needed this past weekend. But you know, Scotty just, he never seems to be out of it. I opened FanDuel on Sunday morning, looking for a hedge against my Xander Schauffele 25-1 bet. And I saw Scotty Scheffler at plus 1,000. He was five shots back at the time. I genuinely thought it was a three-horse race between Xander, Clark, and Brian Harman. I thought one of them would go out and shoot 67. And somehow Scotty comes out and shoots a, 64. He just finds a way to get the job done. It's awesome.
Yeah. You know, he's currently holds the current longest streak in the PGA Tour for most rounds under par. I think it's at 27 or 28. Nobody else is in double digits. But to your point about being Tiger-esque, I mean, Tiger did it over 50 straight rounds. So he's still got, you know, he's only halfway there to what Tiger's record is. But it wouldn't surprise me if he does it, because he does seem to be able to battle through injuries. I mean, when you're, to Capture's point, when you're just that good of a ball striker, it's hard to go over par. And you know, you see Rory is a great ball striker. I think Rory kind of let us down a little bit this weekend after his Thursday performance, getting out hot. It's a story we've seen before. The dude, he's like your relief pitcher that has the nastiest stuff in the world, but he also lets like three pitches get away from him, like every single time he's out there, and getting by the catcher, making those one mistakes, leaving one curveball hanging. He can't seem to put it together. I think we all wanted to see Rory in contention with St. Paddy's Day at the Players. Adam, what were your takeaways maybe from another, I mean, good, solid performance from Rory, but not enough to contend?
Yeah, I think the number one number that jumped out to me, and they said this on Sunday, over the course of the 4 days at the Players, Rory had put 5 balls in the water. Do the math on those strokes. You know, what did he finish at 9 under? I think it was. Yeah. He's If you told me that Rory McIlroy was putting five balls in the water after making the cut, I would have had him a lot closer to maybe four or five under. The fact that he still finished at nine under is honestly insane to me. Like, he's obviously gaining strokes on a lot of his iron play right now. At least he has to be, because his driving accuracy was terrible last week. I think some of the par threes definitely ate him up, and I feel like his issue is more or less trying to get too aggressive on certain holes. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe loosen control, and, you know, same thing started to happen with a lot of the guys on Sunday. I feel like it happened to Xander. You kind of saw him start losing it. Like, his cut turned into a mega cut. Same with Brian Harman, had that happen a couple of times. I think we really overestimate or underestimate, sorry, the toll that goes on over the span of 4 days, you know, from playing a golf tournament, especially when you're coming off of playing however many in a row leading up to that, moving around or kind of, you know, settling into the Florida swing right now. But I'm not really making any excuses. Rory isn't playing the golf that Rory should be playing right now, especially kind of getting the PGA Tour and, like, being, you know, the spokesperson of the tour, like, yep, getting all of that off of his back. I thought he would start to play a lot better. I think he's playing better, just not to the level that he should be at for a guy who's trying to compete. You know, he's trying to put up that career grand slam at Augusta in a month.
Yep, I agree. So, you know, we hit Scotty, we hit Rory. Let's maybe talk about the contenders and the guys that are right there down the stretch. You had Brian Harman, Schauffele, Wyndham, Clark, all at 19 under, one off the lead, all with chances down the stretch to push Scotty to the playoff. It didn't happen. Let's start with Clark and Harman. We'll save Xander for last. What did you see? I mean, I think the moment that most people will probably remember from this tournament is the Clark putt that was halfway down and in. I couldn't believe that that didn't land, but he also was, I mean, there was a lot of heat coming in on that putt too. That was probably the moment we'll all remember. What are you guys' thoughts about Wyndham Clark? Back-to-back weeks coming in second place to Scotty. You know, if Scotty Scheffler didn't exist, this would be a Wyndham Clark show right now today.
Hutch, I'll let you go for this one, because I definitely have some thoughts, but curious what you got in that old noggin.
Yeah. You know, Wyndham Clark, he's had an impressive, what's it been, 11, 12 months now with the win at Wells Fargo. He's got the U.S. Open championship under his belt, and now he's got back-to-back runner-up finishes at the Players and the AP Invitational. You know, when I watch Wyndham Clark, he doesn't look like that guy that would be finishing top five at these big tournaments. He just finds a way to get it done. Mm-hmm. I think he's a phenomenal scrambler. I think he's got an incredibly strong mental game. Don't want to jump the gun on our full swing, you know, recap here, but he's got a phenomenal mental game. If he's got a bad hole, he jumps right back in and he follows it up with a birdie.
Yeah, that's a great point. He didn't have his best stuff on Sunday and at all, to be frank. You know, he came out and going into the weekend at 14 under. That's when he was really pushing. So I was very impressed with his ability to fight and stay in the mix and have that putt at the very end, almost going birdie, birdie, birdie to finish the tournament. Push it. One thing that does just piss me off, I hate, absolutely hate that his caddy lines up like all of his putts. I think that should be illegal. What are we doing here? How is this guy just coming in there with this? He's carrying around a club like he's playing the fucking round for him. It's unbelievable. Pisses me off every time. I do like, you know, the tour showing some of the banter and the conversations between him and the caddy. Those are always very interesting. You know, telling him to get off a club or on a club, the confidence he's instilling in him. I mean, I think highly of the caddy. Don't get me wrong. I just think that's absurd. I've never seen anything like that before. Adam, you said you had some thoughts as well, but go ahead.
Yeah, what if you guys had to guess, what would you say Wyndham Clark's official world golf ranking was 2 years ago?
I think full swing, you know, like I said, we're going to recap this. They dove into a story a little bit. I think it was like right around the hundreds, right?
I would have guessed
that was a year ago.
I would have guessed 85.
A year ago, he was 109th. 2 years ago, he was ranked 268th in the world. And now he's top five. I think I personally did not think that he was capable of doing that. Like, that doesn't really happen. He's not a young guy. Like, he's in his early 30s right now. He's been playing for, a decade professionally, whether it was on the PGA Tour, Korn Ferry, or I guess the web.com back in the day, whatever it was. I don't really know that much about him other than the fact that he kind of came out of nowhere. Like, he, whatever he did, whatever he changed, I kind of want like a full mini series just on Wyndham Clark right now, just because it's like no one's really talking about him. Like, him and Brian Harman are two guys who, in my mind, are playing some of the best golf in the world right now and aren't really being talked about that much because Scotty exists or because,
Major winners last
oh,
year.
yeah, both of them. And it's like, I mean,
Ryder
were they
Cup.
both, really impressive at the Ryder Cup? No, but was anybody also? Not really. Like, there was maybe one good performance out of all of Team USA last year at the Ryder Cup, and that's more or less just watching them get bodied by Europe on home soil was just brutal. But yeah, who the fuck is this guy to just
Yeah.
show up and go from 268th to 5th in 2 years?
He hits the ball a mile. His caddy apparently is unreal at reads. And what I think is most impressive is he does generate a lot of strength, and he had a few shots this weekend out of the thick rough that he hit the ball just way further than anybody should be able to hit the ball out of that rough. And I think that would be like his superpower. I mean, all these guys have one or two things that kind of sets them apart from somebody else. For me, like Scotty, it's the way he's able to shape every shot that he wants to. Wyndham has this, that ability you mentioned earlier to scramble out of some of this deep, thick rough because he just has such a strong lower body and generates so much power in his feet.
You remember that shot on number one on Saturday where he was in some deep stuff? Xander was in position A, and Wyndham just sticks it to. It was looking like it might have been a two-shot swing, and somehow Wyndham comes out of there with gaining a shot on Xander. But to your point a little bit earlier, I think it was you, Mr. Old Chisholm. To the novice golfer, a caddy is a guy who just carries the sticks. But I think the tour has done something really cool where they're miking these guys up, and you can hear the conversation that they're having mid-round. And what all goes into a shot. You saw Xander's caddy holding up a pencil before every single shot, showing him what wind direction goes. There's a lot more that goes into, being a caddy than just carrying a guy's clubs and telling him how far away he is. And one other quick point about Wyndham Clark. I think he's not a very talked about guy right now because he doesn't have a huge personality. And there's one thing that really pissed me off this past week that he said. I think he completely forgot about the path that he went on in order to get to where he's at right now. He said something along the lines of the PGA Tour should only be 100 guys. Like, dude, do you not remember that you were you were in the 200s in the official world golf rankings 2 years ago? You remember? You not not You forgot how you got here? I don't know. That really rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah,
I don't
those were
know.
some interesting comments. I think we talked briefly about him last week, even on this show. I think that maybe the idea behind it necessarily isn't terrible. Where there's a relegation is kind of what he was saying about the top 100, and then there's still the lower tours. But we all love a Cinderella, and I just think he could have conveyed the message a little bit better. And like you said, recognized the path that he took and had a little bit more. I don't know if grace is the right word, but just kind of recognition of his path. I would agree with you there. So yeah, I think it's time we talk a little bit about Xander though. This is a guy, we're coming into an Olympic year. The biggest win of his career is probably the Olympic gold medal. As a Xander guy, like what drew you into Xander, man? What do you like about him? What are the things that, get you excited when you watch him play?
I mean, the thing that makes me most exciting as a bettor, and more or less a fan, is he's always in it. 42 straight made cuts. He's
I didn't
got the
know that.
second best scoring average on tour. He's got the second best scoring record on tour this year, behind none other than Scottie Scheffler. I think Scottie's is 67.4 and Xander's like 68.5, but he's Mr. Consistent. you know, he's I think he's making about 90% of his cuts in his entire career. And he makes top 25 about 50% of the time or something like that. I was looking at a little bit earlier. But like you said, I think it's pretty cool recognition or went on his resume that he got the gold medal draped around his neck a few years back.
And something too, just, I mean, yeah, we're talking about looking forward, but the top four finishers and the players, the four guys right now slated to go to the Olympics for the United States. Thought that was pretty neat too. Go ahead, Adam.
I personally think Xander, I was pretty big on him early, like a few years ago. I remember being in college and being like, all right, yeah, he's going to break out. He's going to go. And yeah, to your point, like the Olympic gold medal was huge, but he's one of those guys that I feel like when I watch him, he loves to win more than he hates to lose, if that makes sense. And I think one of the things that separates like good from great from a mental standpoint is you see these guys that are like, they're playing because they can't lose, or they're just trying not to let anyone beat them. Like they have to go and take over, like do all this random shit. And I don't even know if that's what's happening in Scotty's mind, because he always is like, oh, I give it up to God. And it's really hard to see through that sometimes. But like when you think of the best golfers ever, like a Spieth during his run in what was that, like 2013, when he won like three majors.
15.
Or no, it wasn't. Yeah, 15. 15, sorry. 16. Yeah, he won like 10 events, three majors, FedEx Cup. Like the dude was unbeatable for a year and a half. And I mean, Tiger, like Tiger didn't love to win. Tiger hated to lose. Like anyone that thought they could beat Tiger, like anytime he had bulletin board material, it was over. That was the minute it was over, is if he had any reason to want to beat you. And I feel like Xander is almost too laid back. Like the only person that I honestly think that I dislike from a personality standpoint more than Xander is Patrick Cantlay. And it's hilarious because they're best friends, but like they're both like so vanilla, so boring. There's no real product. Like they're great golfers, don't get me wrong, but it's like, do you even want to be here, or are you just like trying to make money and then leave? Like it's almost like playing golf and winning tournaments is how like they get a paycheck more than it is them being like, oh, I want to do this for real, which is weird seeing them stay at the PGA Tour, but I think it's just because they know they're going to be able to do this for another 10, 15 years.
You were talking about Spieth's incredible run, and you know, I think Hutch and I both were thinking this, like, hey, if Xander can pull this one out in this field down the stretch, maybe like we could see, because the consistency's there, maybe that could be, you know, the tournament that just breaks it all open for him. Scotty was kind of similar. I know we keep going back to him, but he won the Waste Management Open. Then what happened? He won the very next weekend, you know, for his second career win. And, like, it's funny how that happens. Tony Finau, another great example. Once he started winning a couple, he started winning a lot more because you build that confidence. And we'll talk about this in the full swing portion of the show, but it really highlights how mental of a game golf is. And that's where, to Hutch's point, the caddy is just so important to keep you there, massaging your mentals, keeping you in the moment. When you think about, like, let's say hole 16, Hutch, Xander has this great look for eagle. And, like, deep down, like, why do we all expect him to just come up 3 feet short there? Like, that was just the epitome, encapsulated his whole personality for me. He has the chance to, you know, step on their throats, step on their necks, bang this eagle putt, go up by a, you know, go tie with two holes left, and he leaves it 3 foot short. It was just, that was hard to watch.
That's a putt you can't leave short. You just simply can't leave it short. Yeah, you'd rather leave that 4 or 5 feet long than 3 feet short. At least give it a run.
Which is, you know, a lot of respect for Windham's putt, even though it didn't go down. Like he was making sure that putt was going to get to the hole on 18.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I have the mental fortitude to be a Xander fan much longer. I think we're going on like 30 tournaments in a row of at least sprinkling something on Xander. And the worst part about it is every single tournament, you think you got a chance. You think he got a chance? He's right there. He's got the lead pretty much all day Sunday. And then he just blows it. Going back to Adam's point, I simply think it's he doesn't know how to win. He doesn't know how to seal the deal. And that's a big skill to have in golf. It's not easy to win these tournaments. That's kind of going back to that point, Turner, where if he got this one done, I think that might have opened up the floodgates for him. But I think we're back to square one with him.
So now we have, March Madness. That's going to capture most of our attention here for the next 2 weekends. But we all know what's on the other side of March Madness. You got the Masters. This is Jim Nantz season. No longer doing March Madness this year for the first time since I think I've been alive. He's got all of his focus on the Masters. We're going to look a little bit ahead. The majors only matter more and more now. They already were kind of the gold standard golf, what people look to. But now with the way that, the tour is structured with LIV, the fields in these majors are just so much better than even the elevated tour events. What are your guys' just expectations or thoughts going into the Masters? Hutch has his Masters hat on. He's actually been on the grounds. Maybe you can give us a little bit of an inside scoop of just kind of what it's like in Augusta and what you're excited or expecting here.
Yeah, I'll start off what it's like in Augusta. It truly is heaven on earth. Immediately when you walk on the grounds, everything is run efficiently, from the bathrooms to the pro shop to, the concession stand. There's thousands of workers everywhere pointing you where to go. It's super nice to get around. And I'm sure you guys have probably heard this. There's not a weed on the grounds. There's seriously, we took like 30 minutes at one point where we were like kind of actively looking for a weed. There's nothing. I've heard they spray paint the grass green. It's that pretty. It's even prettier when you go. It's incredible. Unfortunately, I only got to go to a practice round, but nonetheless, I went there for the course. I didn't really go there for the tournament. But in my opinion, it's the best tournament in all of golf.
Yeah. Caption.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say I would take it up a notch. I would say it's the best event in all of sports. I think the allure of the event, the legends that have been made through the Masters, Jim Nantz, like literally every aspect of this event has not only been great, right? Like it's nestled in this little random nook of the southeast of the country. It's one of those. Name another major played at the same course every year, right? Like everything about the Masters is it's perfect. I think the elitism of like a country club makes something that much more desirable. Like the fact that it's this invite only private club. It's like a real boys club at that. You don't even get to keep the jacket. You have to leave it there. You get to keep it for like a year, is it, after you win? And then after that, it has to stay on the grounds. Like, there's something about this, because it kicks everything off too, right? Like, mm-hmm. Everything that's happening right now is all in preparation for this event. And then three more will follow. But this is kind of like, all right, life is beginning. This is what spring looks like. Even the shit that goes on behind the scenes, dude, like when you think about like the champion's dinner. Meal, right? Mm-hmm. You think about like the caddies playing and like the par three tournament that happens the day before. You think about the one that no one really talks about enough is like the women's amateur and like the kids putt drive and chip competition. Like there's all these random little things going on, all just in essence building momentum for this tournament and just showing how beautiful of a golf course this is. And it's one of those things that I genuinely don't know what compares to it, just in terms of this is the only thing that you can really do your best to keep consistency and like the controllables are controlled every time, to Hutch's point. Like they know exactly what they are doing. It's really just a matter of like, do you know the course? Can you go out?
To keep it pure, like you were saying, this it's like the best. I truly believe it is like the best ran sporting event. in the world because of the way they structure it. You know, you have a raffle to get in. You can't just buy your way into the tournament. I mean, sure, I'm sure there's some kind of loopholes, but for the most, you know, the general public, it's a raffle. It's like a reward. It's a once in a lifetime opportunity to go and enjoy the course. You know, Iowa women's basketball has a game this weekend at home, the Caitlin Clark Effect. Tickets are over $1,000. Like, you know, that is just, you know, absurd, right? And then there's the Masters here where you can get a sandwich for like $350. It's, you know, that's just the most pure event possible. And I respect the fuck out of the fact that there is tradition to it. And they're not trying to appease every person. They're trying to stay true to themselves and like the event they want to put on, right?
One other piece there is just the buildup to the Masters is second to none. I think starting in January or February this year, when you're on CBS, you get a Masters commercial and you hear that theme song. And it just said shivers up your back. You're like, oh my God, I'm so excited for this event. But yeah, no, the buildup to it is incredible. And what you were saying, Turner, about the $3 sandwich, I think I've got pretty much everything on the menu and I spent like $30. And normally you'll spend like $25 for a beer at a ball game these days, it seems like. So just all those little things that are overlooked.
All right, let's take a break, and then we're going to come back with just a couple more, yeah, just thoughts here, and then we'll get into some of our full swing review. All right, we're back. Real quick question I wanted to ask Adam. You know, LIV Golf, we don't like to talk about it or think about it too much here. We try and stay PGA Tour focused. How much do you just miss out on the rivalry that was building, a healthy one, between Rombo and Scheffler just being the best guys going into the tournament every weekend, almost even odds to win the tournament? It doesn't feel like Scotty has a peer in that sense anymore. How much do you miss Rombo on the course? Because this weekend I really felt his absence and was just like, damn, I wish John was out there. Yeah, any thoughts there?
Yeah, I miss him so much. He was one of those guys that you could count on. He was either going to play really, really well, or he was going to give you an unbelievable quote as to why he wasn't, right? Like, I remember the California swing last year, I think it was. Like, there was a tournament where he was walking off one of the greens, and he was like, this is just a fucking putting competition at this point, because it was like he wasn't putting well. God, I can't remember what tournament it was, but like he was so pissed, and it's the Spaniard in him, right? Like he's doing it better than Sergio because he's actually likable. Yeah, but like he's still just this fiery little Spaniard with a fucked up foot, right? Like that's who John Rahm was, and then he became like this god with his short backswing and, you know, size 36 pants with, you know, 24-inch inseam, and it was like, I love this guy. Like, I feel he was perfect. And you look at him, you're like, I bet he's a great dad. I don't know about him as a husband, but I know for a fact that he's a good dad. Like, as soon as – like, some of the putts that Rahm used to make – you guys remember, like, it was like a 72-footer against DJ or something to win.
The BMW.
I don't know if we're ever – like, we don't have really anyone – like Wyndham Clark just missed a 17 footer, right? Like we don't really have anyone on the tour anymore that kind of has that. Like DJ was one
guy, but sometimes when Cantlay can get rolling on the greens, he'll start just pouring them in with a little foot shuffle. Haven't seen it yet this year, obviously, but yeah, to your point.
Yeah.
Do you guys think Rahm leaves the tour if he didn't win the Masters last year to go to LIV?
No.
I think Rahm's a man of principle, and I think he really did just feel like Jay Moynihan was being a weasel. And he said, fuck it. I was staying here, I had backed him up, and then now you kind of double-crossed me. What am I holding out for? And yes, I agree, the Masters win helps. It also probably helps that last year, who was his main competition in the Masters, was a LIV guy that was playing in the majors. So he's like, I'm still going to play in these big events. We'll see what happens. We'll see how this turns out. It looks like there could be a merger down the road. Why do I care? Let me play in some shorts for a little bit and then see what happens. I'm brand new dad. Got a lot going for me in that sense. So I don't know. That's a good question. I guess I can't speak for the guy, but my take on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I miss a lot. Like there's, there's not a ton of guys before we kind of jump in, and I think this might be a good segue. I don't really miss anybody. Like, I don't really miss Brooks. Like, I get to watch him during the majors. I didn't give a shit about him unless it was a major because he didn't give a shit. The guy openly hates golf, and he's on it. Like, he's the biggest douchebag that has probably ever played golf, not named Ian Poulter. I think.
Dude, like, that's Cam Smith.
I fucking hate Ian Poulter. Oh my god, that guy is such a crotch.
Yeah,
he's the definition of a crotchety dude.
Yeah,
Cam Smith is
like
Ian Poulter.
Oh, Ian Poulter, okay.
Mr. Poltergeist. Yeah.
Dude, I was really into Cam Smith for like three tournaments, and then immediately he goes to LIV, and I was like, well, you know, there goes that opportunity for fandom and stardom. But like, the guys that I think DJ is the one that I miss the most because of the fact that he's always been exactly who he is. Like, he's never gone out there and tried to be too much or do too much. He's just like, I'm going to step up here, hit the shit out of this ball, and then I'm going to go home and bang Wayne Gretzky's daughter. And
do blow.
Like, that, yeah, like, that's blow. That's his MO. That's been DJ. I feel like this is a good transition into Full Swing here. So let's tie in.
Full Swing, season 2 on Netflix. If you haven't seen it, honestly, I mean, most of this stuff, if you're following golf, you're listening to the show, none of it's necessarily new. You just do get a little bit more of the inside scoop. I think we can maybe try and do this as much as possible in chronological order, kind of just maybe walk through the episodes as they walk through the season. We'll try and be less repetitive than Full Swing is. I think that Full Swing, it's a tough story to tell with, you know, all these different players and these different events. Does err on the side of repetitive. They do like to hammer home some narratives over the course of an episode. Last year, I think it was, there's a cut. You don't get paid if there isn't a cut. So I was glad they got away from that this year. I don't think I've heard cut once. They listened to the feedback. I do think they improved a little bit this year. From last year, they shed a little bit of the novelty and the novice talk. But the first episode mainly centered around kind of LIV versus PGA. That was kind of the narrative and the story they were trying to tell. Rory was kind of the main guy they were following throughout that episode. Got to learn a little bit more about his mindset. Any thoughts, I guess, just Rory, LIV versus PGA? There was one comment that Rory made, I'll save, maybe Caps will bring it up, but anything that just jumped off the page for y'all?
I mean, I thought Rory, the best part of this season was, felt like a sacrificial lamb. I feel horrible for the guy. I mean, he went to war for the PGA Tour, and he got stabbed in the back by what he said in the episode was one of his best friends, Jay Monahan.
That is the point, yep. Like, that was the most insane thing I've ever heard.
I didn't know that they were that close until he said that. And I was like, you know, with how involved Rory was through the whole process, you know, always getting in front of the media, having the PGA Tour's back, and then all of a sudden his quote-unquote best friend goes and makes a deal behind his back. What is all that about?
And it's cool because they are getting these interviews throughout the year. So, like, he obviously said that before, you know, shit went down, and then you get the interview after. Go ahead, Adam.
I think the biggest thing that you can take away is the first episode was truthfully them like closing the chapter on last year, starting a new one, and kind of just setting the tone of like, all right, here's the biggest thing right now is that Rory has been the poster child of the PGA. Like, he is by far the biggest name, the biggest star that is still there. Could have been Spieth, but he kind of fell off for a bit. Could have been JT, but he played like shit all of last year, and we'll touch on that because that was an entire episode. But like, Rory is the most consistent person, I would say, on the tour. Like, he's gonna have his tantrums every now and then. The dude's, you know, he's Irish, but like, I think the biggest thing with Rory is that he's always gonna be around. Like, even when he's, you know, 10 shots back, he's gonna fire off a 63 on a random Sunday to make sure that he's, you know, tied for seventh or something. Mm-hmm. Like, even when he's down, he's not out. Like, he'll always fight back, and I think the dude lives for that. And it really felt like he was just a pawn. And it kind of reminds you that, like, for the PGA Tour to be, you know, an organization owned by the players, quote unquote, it's not. They're also a victim to corporate America. They are also, you know, a bunch of guys who think they control their own destiny, they control their own fate, but they really don't. Any given year, they could come out and change a rule, like, hey, you can't use, you can't use mallet putters. Like, it's essentially that, right? Because for Rory, that's his thing. It's like, he's going to hit the ball as far, if not farther, than any other guy on tour, even though he's 5'4". Like, it blows my mind the more that, like, every presser that Rory did, every single opportunity he had to leave and probably make more money than anybody, like, other than Tiger, who would have made that much simply because he's Tiger, Rory was the biggest name probably in golf. He has more personality than anybody, and, like, he's a great dad, good husband. Like, he's never really tried to be.
They showed his car, you know, and, like, one of the albums in the front was, like, Moana. I was like, you know, that's a guy that's been driving around this kid a lot.
Like, he's somehow remained so humble, even though he was a phenom at the age of 16, you know? Like, they'll show that clip of Justin Thomas all the time, like, playing and making the cut in an event, but, like, it wasn't that long ago that, you know, they were playing the Open at a course that Rory set the course record at the age of 16 years old. Did he make the cut that week? No. But, like, 16-year-old him would have, you know? Like, it's crazy to think about, especially with the fact that, you know, he's had so many majors and he's just not able to get that fifth one. Like, it almost breaks your heart knowing that he's putting other priorities ahead of his own golf game in order to grow the game and grow the tour, while almost what it made it seem like was, like, him jeopardizing his own ability to go out and win on a week-to-week basis. Like, Morikawa made that comment in that episode. You know, the dude goes home and goes on 50 Zoom calls, and all that he wants to do is just sleep. But he's putting on, and he was doing it, truthfully, like, the sacrificial lamb thing.
The end of the day, he wasn't in the room, didn't have any idea of anything that was going on. Moynihan kind of comes across as a weasel, for sure. Looks like he was playing
playing
that friendship up for, like, you know, his benefit. And then once that friendship wasn't as useful to him anymore, you know, forget about it. So I did feel bad for Rory in that sense. But overall, I mean, I think he came across as, like, super likable guy, good dude. I love all, like, the just seeing the players in the locker room chatting about rounds or just chatting about, like, the course. Makes them just seem much more personable and takes away a little bit of the, you know, LIV versus PGA Tour drama, because it's like, you know, these guys are all dudes that have been coworkers more or less for 20 years. Something else that, you know, this episode was kind of pivoting McIlroy versus Brooks on the LIV side. Captured already gave some thoughts about Brooks. To me, my takeaway is Brooks wants to be DJ. Like, he surpassed him in majors, but, like, Jenna Sims is just a Polina replica, like a Polina wannabe. Like, his whole attitude, like, I think DJ is actually, like, nonchalant, and I think Brooks is more likable when he actually, like, shows how much he does care, or, like, some of his more likable aspects. But I don't know. He came across better than last year. I thought he was pretty whiny and annoying last year, and this year at least he had his confidence and his swagger back, and, you know, he won a fifth major. He came in second at the Masters. But it was interesting to see how they were kind of playing those two off of each other, and I really appreciated after he won his, you know, major, Rory and him, you know, in the parking lot, dapping each other up, you know, congrats, you deserved it. That's the cool stuff that I like to see, which gets me excited for Full Swing versus some of the over-the-top narrative-driven stories they're trying to tell. The last thing I'll say on this episode, then we can move on, is you can really tell they're trying to appeal to a non-golf audience when in the first episode you get a Dude Perfect cameo and a Jake Paul cameo. I was like, what the fuck is this shit?
Yeah,
I didn't like that either. Especially the Jake Paul one was horrible. That was horrible.
If you like LIV Golf, you like Jake Paul, and vice versa. Like, I don't know how else. You probably are obsessed with Nelk Boys I'm assuming that like I'm essentially assuming that you're just a piece of shit, like human. If you were a day one ride or die live guy, I don't really like you because I know for a fact that your morals and standards will amount to that of an ice cube.
Just melt away, baby.
That's
Melt away.
my initial and honest, I don't know if it's because I'm too stubborn, but like that's in no way, shape, or form me defending the PGA Tour. I think they're as, if not more, sleazy with a lot of the shit that, that episode highlighted. Jay did everything behind the backs of the players because of his inability to control and steer the ship and actually retain talent on the only tour. Like he allowed another tour to not only one exist, but number two, take a number of his best players, a number of like the reasons that fans go to these events. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah,
That was
I agree.
100% on Jay. It was 100%. The only person you could blame is Jay. And he continues to make an ass of himself.
God, his speech to the players after was horrible.
He
Do you guys
can
watch that?
fucking
It's tough
no.
to get booed in golf, and he found a way to do that to himself.
Yeah. Episode two mainly focused on DJ and then Ricky Fowler. I think we can be a little bit slower, like quicker on this episode. I mean, I think both these guys have been around for a long time. I don't know if I learned anything new about them. I did think that, my two takeaways on this one was the golf coaches. One, I thought that DJ's golf coach, he's like kind of a Guido type dude. I thought he was just a bit of a dick, asshole. And it made sense why, like, they immediately just went to live and want to show him riding boats and throwing footballs to his brother, which I do appreciate that his brother's his caddy. We'll love a good brother tandem on the bag. And then I saw Butch Harmon, who was, a legendary golf coach in the game of golf, and him and Ricky working. It's sweet to see these guys' personal facilities too. Like, they're unbelievable. My biggest takeaway is like, oh my God, I just want Butch Harmon to come and like coach me for a week in life. The way he was explaining things, the way he was just perfect. Everything I wanted to like, everything I imagined these like legendary golf coaches are. He's probably like 80 years old. He's just, he's like Kung Fu Panda. What's his name? Master the Turtle.
Shifu.
Yeah, he's like Shifu's
Oogway.
he's like Master Oogway out there. The way he was explaining, golf and the technique. It was cool to watch. But those are my takeaways. I don't know if you guys had any deep thoughts on DJ or Ricky.
One just quick thought. If there's one guy in the game of golf I want to win a major, it's Ricky Fowler. That's all I gotta say. He deserves one.
Yeah. He deserves it, but I don't think he ever gets one. He'll never be what he was. The closest he's been was at the US Open last year. Couldn't find a way to get it done.
There was that stretch a few years ago where he top five in every major of the year.
Yeah, that was
Yeah.
his prime.
Yeah. I think you're right though. I don't think he ever gets one, but I really want to see him get one.
The
I
fact that he's
want
back in
to.
the mix is great though. Like, making the Ryder Cup team last year, I don't think that was on anybody's radar 2 years
Nope.
ago. So shout out to
I
Butch
think
there.
we all know why. Like he it's exactly the same thing, and we'll touch
With
on this
Rory.
when we get to the end of the episodes. It's the exact same thing as why Keegan didn't make the Ryder Cup team.
Yeah, we can talk about that.
It's literally the boys' league, the boys' club. Are you friends with
The
Spieth and
guy.
JT or
Yeah.
are you not? Those two. It's that. Are you
Yeah.
friends with those two guys or are you not? They
And I thought
run the
Rory,
entire social construct of the PGA Tour.
I agree, but I thought Ricky was good enough last year to make it on his own merit as well. But to your point, if his name was Harris English and he had that season, Harris has been on the Ryder Cup, but like he's probably not going to make it.
If his name was Keegan Bradley, he's not going to make it. And Keegan played better than he did.
Episode three, we had Winham and Joel. This, episode, they kind of positioned them as one guy, Joel Dahman, who's never been really a dominant golfer, as a guy that is kind of losing the mental edge. And then Winham as a guy that's, going through all this different, self-help, if you want to call it that, to perfect his mental side of the golf game. That was an interesting, dichotomy between the two. Any takeaways from this one? I mean, Joel Diamond was a real big, breakout star from season one, likable guy. But yeah, this episode is pretty standard. But any thoughts?
I didn't like this episode. I didn't like that they brought Joel Diamond back. I thought he was great in season one, but I didn't need to see him again in season two, if I'm being quite honest with you.
Yeah, it was a bit of a hard watch because it really did feel like he kind of resented some of the fame that came out of season one.
It was depressing.
I really don't think he's changed that much as a golfer in his performances. Like year over year, I was looking at all of his finishes and his money earned. It was just now, as he said, there's just so much more eyes on me. And so it used to be I miss a cut and, that's just another week because I'm a fringe top 75 golfer. But now I miss a cut and it makes the news. And it was obviously weighing pretty hard on him. So there was this weird, they have all those cameras back there again, while simultaneously I feel like those cameras were making him feel uncomfortable because he kind of blamed that fame and that exposure from the previous year. Love Joel. Love Gino. If you guys have never listened to this podcast episode where Gino talks about breaking the world record for most golf rounds played in a week, I think it's No Laying Up. Second time we've given him a shout out today. It's one of the coolest golf stories I've ever heard in my life. The dude was playing like just obscene amounts of rounds daily for about like 18 hours a day. it's nuts. Literally like from sun up to sundown.
I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, it's one of the coolest things I've ever heard in my life. Like just the grit that this guy has to be able to play over 1,000 holes of golf in a week. We already talked about Windham. I don't think we need to go into this. Episode 4 focuses on Tom Kim. I loved this episode. Tom Kim is a affable dude, enjoyable guy.
Star.
What's your favorite thing about Tom Kim, Hutch?
I mean, I think my favorite thing about him is that he's just a kid. He's a kid out there living out his dream, and you can see it in how he plays the game. He's having a lot of fun. I think after – I can't remember what tournament he won, but I think it was the Shriners maybe.
Yep.
After he won the Shriners, he's like, all I want to do is go back and eat my piece of chocolate. What PGA Tour player says that? Yeah. Like you're in Vegas. You just won, a couple million bucks. You go out, gamble, party, go to the clubs.
He just turned 21, too.
You go back to your hotel room and eat a piece of chocolate.
Room service.
Yeah, exactly. One other quick thing on this episode. I don't know if it's just the media as a whole or if it's him directly, but Dan Rappaport is way too dramatic for me talking about golf. It is way too dramatic. It is
so over the top. I was texting live updates today. I was watching this in the background as I worked, and it's like the hyperbole. It's like he makes it sound like life or death. It is over the top. The inflection, the voice inflections, the whole thing. I like Danny Rapp. I think that there's some, he does some good write-ups. I like to read about some of the things he has to say before and after tournaments. He's a golf nerd. As one of our friends pointed out, like he really cares about this stuff, which is great. You want people that care about the sport to be covering it. I think that's a major problem with NBA basketball right now. A lot of the guys that cover NBA basketball like hate NBA basketball, and it just makes it an unenjoyable product. But dude, you nailed it on the head. Like the way he acts in these interviews is just, it's unbelievable. I can't.
Yeah. Just wanted to talk.
There's not really much. I think weirdly, he's one of those guys that's like worse with Barstool than he was away from it. Like he was kind of cool in the golf media world because it was like, I feel like I can relate to this guy. And then you pull him out of that and you allow him to do whatever he really wants, right? Like you're a journalist with no limitations. You can say whatever you want. And he didn't really change at all. And it was like, okay, I relate to you a lot less now. I respect your nerddom, your fandom, whatever you want to call it. But like, where does it stop for you? Because in my mind, it almost made him come off as like it's like a Rothstein with college basketball, where it's like, I don't think you have the ability to do anything else at times. I don't think he's that far.
I agree,
but it's Rothstein, almost like I want you to be, you know?
Rothstein
makes it
some self-awareness desirable. Where he's like in on the joke. Like he knows that he's a psych. Like
right,
he knows he's
right,
a chicken.
Right. Exactly. And I think Rappaport knows that, but he thinks we don't. Like yeah. That's the difference.
Yeah. It is
he's
funny
like,
how
they don't know that like they don't know that I'm like cranking down to this, you know, five business days a week. It's like, yeah, we do, bud.
There's the other young guy that they have kind of come in and interject with, you know, like the reporter.
Dylan Dethier.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes he was just reading off a teleprompter to, like, you know, help tell the story they wanted to tell for that episode, which is fine. I get it, but it was just, it is what it is. I had that written down for my notes, too. Go ahead,
Dylan is too good looking to be a golf reporter.
Yeah.
And you can't have it all. You can't, like, no. Like you don't get to
be hot, sexy.
Unless if you're a woman, not even like they don't even bring in like the top of the brass for women in golf. Like you have to have some pizzazz, you know. Like you gotta have some personality.
Have you seen that on their duty? I don't
know. You know, like if you're or an accent. If you have an accent, you're in. Like,
yeah. I mean, dude.
The exception to the rule is who is
not on the call with his
Smiley Kaufman.
Ooh, Smiley Kaufman.
Oh yeah, Kiz is great. Yeah. But no, Smiley's great. But you know why everyone loves him? Exact same reason why everybody loves Ricky. He's boys club
with
JT.
Yeah, 100%. It's like the Illuminati of golf. Those two. It all starts with JT's dad, dude. He's the guy that's
yes, it does.
He's he's the Ratatouille up there, you know, under the chef's hat, making everything happen.
The man's a puppeteer.
Oh, dude, this episode opened up with Tom Kim unable to, you know, like speak out some kind of like own it, prove it, win it, like type of thing.
All buttery, flaky crust.
Yes, that's what I had written down. That's all I could think about.
That's the best video on Twitter.
Damn, it's flaky.
That's the best video on the internet, dude. That's all I could think about when he was fucking it up. I said
buttery,
I really like
crispy crust.
I really like Tom Kim because he gives off huge fat guy energy. All he wants to do is eat pimento cheese sandwiches and then roll around on his electric cooler.
Dude, he has the biggest ass I've ever seen on a golfer. It's insane! Bigger than Rombino.
And then the very last thing that I just called out was him getting all muddy, just all up in the mud, and all the older golfers just being like, what the fuck is this kid doing? Just like, what happened down there? He's like, I don't know, I didn't even get the ball. He's a funny cat.
He's just a little piggy rolling around in the mud, just having fun. No, dude,
to get the mud off him.
One of my favorite Tom Kim stories is, at least I'm pretty sure it was Tom Kim, was he's obviously like over in the U.S. playing golf at like a younger age. All of his family's still back in Korea, I'm pretty sure. And Thanksgiving rolled around. I think this was last year. And he actually ended up spending Thanksgiving with Jordan Spieth, with Spieth's entire family. And that's the end of the story, but it leaves so much to the imagination that it makes it better because that's the end. You're like, what happened? Like, Spieth's a Dallas guy. What happens when Tom Kim is sitting there watching the Cowboys with a room full of like Dallas natives? What happens when like they're passing shit around and like, oh, I'm thankful for this, I'm thankful for that. And you have 19-year-old Tom Kim, just you're like, is this guy real? Like, he's like a real life teddy bear. He's got the perfect little chubby cheeks. His eyes glisten like he's an Asian Santa Claus without a beard. Like, everything about this guy is so adorable. It's so fucking perfect. And then you watch him play golf and you're like, this is fake, right? Like, there's CGI happening. Like, this is, you know, this is liberal propaganda, the fact that this guy's here right now. But then There he is in the Spieth household, November 27th.
Adam, how do you think he got this? He got a full episode all to himself on Full Swing. Nobody else got really a full episode of himself. You don't think that got spawned over at that Thanksgiving dinner at the Spieth place? You don't think Spieth was, he was just cracking up laughing? TK was just cracking jokes left and right. He puts a call into big old Mr. Thomas, puts a call into Full Swing. They get TK a whole feature episode.
I think there a chance that Jordan is actually running everything behind the scenes? Like, he's like, it's like a Cyrano de Bergerac where Rory is like the face, but it's actually Jordan Spieth.
Well, because, you know, one thing Jordan's
not really, like, he's sort of in the show, but he's never like the focal point of an episode, which seems absurd to me.
Yeah, that's true. He is kind of.
How you pointed out, that's a fair point.
He's hiding in plain sight every episode, every tournament.
There was really no Jordan Spieth story to tell last year besides the one, you know, that we'll get 30 years from now that he was running the whole show. Next episode,
you heard it here first.
Fitzpatrick brothers. I mean, Matt Fitzpatrick is such a nerd.
Fuck this episode.
But this is my favorite episode. Matt Fitzpatrick is such a nerd, but he's such a likable guy too. At the same point, like, he owns himself. He owns who he is. He got the braces on. He's calling himself a twat after making some bad shots. I like Fitzy. Hutch is shaking his head. I do also like, this was like the one time they featured, and the narrative that they drew up for this show was a little over the top about getting out of your brother's shadow, when I was just more fascinated and interested by, you know, a 500 to 600 ranked golfer, and like, what does that look like? Like, I found that to be really interesting. These guys that are just grinding on, you know, the secondary tours, trying to make it in. Like, he made the cut for the British Open. That was pretty neat. You guys not a fan of this episode? How come? What was, you know, maybe what you didn't like about it?
I think there's just better stories to tell on a PGA Tour than, you know, a 600.
Oh, yeah,
because
DJ's got a new boat and Brooks is having sex every night. What? Like, that's just as good of a story as the rest of Full Swing.
Yeah, no, but I mean, Hutch just said the PGA Tour. That you're talking live already, Jack. Like, the PGA Tour, to Hutch's point, I don't give a fuck. Like, I watch Iowa football every year. I have enough nepotism in my life as it is. I don't give a fuck about Matt Fitzpatrick's brother at all. Like, good for him. Good for you. Do an episode on Brooks's brother. Yeah, your brother just made $800 billion, is banging Jenna Sims, has a beautiful black lab named Cove, and he doesn't have to think for the rest of his life. What do you do? That's a lot more interesting of a story, and it's not even PGA Tour related anymore. It's like, I am much more, like, give me, like, a under the rug, like a Tom Hoagie. Give me a guy that's, like, as vanilla as the rest of them.
Most interesting story out of the whole series.
Really?
Outside of the Ryder
really?
Cup stuff.
Yeah, I mean really, taking the Ryder Cup stuff out of it, like.
Maybe I was just putting myself in that guy's shoes, but, like, they overhammer that narrative about being in your brother's shadow. But it is cool to see a dude that's just grinding, and he knows, like, I don't know, like, he's. If Jake Hutch was on the tour and Hutch was grinding to make it and the Zurich Classic takes place, I hope that Big Hutch is going to bring Sam along and say, hey, let's just go out there and tear this shit up. Like, a tag team brothers. The Fitzpatrick parents are cute as hell. They both have gorgeous girlfriends. I was loving the whole dynamic.
I agree that, yes, I wish my brother took me, but I don't need to see that when there's 8 episodes to recap an entire season. I just think they could have done better with that 45-minute time slot. I don't. Every time they also brought up Alex Fitzpatrick's girlfriend, it pissed me off. I don't know why.
She had a big part of the episode, but they did focus on a lot of significant others throughout, you know, the series.
They did.
I personally thought, just to jump ahead a little bit, this season sucked compared to last year.
Agree.
Awful. They had, it was really 6 episodes that you covered the actual season, and then 2 episodes dedicated to the Ryder Cup, which I don't disagree with by any means. But of those 6 episodes, you're telling me that going back and catching up with Joel Dahman was like the best possible way to spend 45 minutes. Like, you're out of your fucking mind, Netflix. If you're thinking that I need to spend two episodes about Matt Fitzpatrick's brother and how Joel is doing after receiving fame. Like, I don't really care. I'm here to learn about, like, what is, like, the under the rug, under the cover shit. I want dirty tea. I want the inside scoop. Give it to me.
We're such golf fans. I was feeling a lot of the same way. The most fun I had with the show is literally just, like, the little conversations between two players on the course or in the locker room or after.
Dude, when,
like,
they're in the locker rooms.
When Rory and Ricky were talking about, you know, LACC, it's getting dark out and it's fucking up their putts and they're pissed off about it. Like, that's the stuff that, like, I loved and, like, I found to be really fascinating. I also understand they're trying to appeal to, you know, maybe not your diehard golf fan that's looking for a storyline to follow. Let's get into the last three episodes. I mean, they're all pretty much... Go ahead, Adam.
That's why LIV Golf exists. That's my take. I don't think Netflix knows what they're doing or what they stepped into. Because they started this show and it was pretty much... They could have shit on camera every episode and just, like, had someone talk about the LIV Tour, PGA Tour debacle last year and it would have done great. Then they didn't know what to do after that other than be like, how do we kill six episodes before we fill two with the Ryder Cup? Which, even the Ryder Cup last year sucked. It was an awful, awful event. In terms of how great Ryder Cups normally are, Europe dog walked the U.S. Like, I know the score was like we only lost by like 5 points, whatever. We lost Saturday morning. Like, it was pretty much over. We didn't do what we needed to do ever. I think we win, like, a single, maybe two events, two matches. Like, it was so bad that I don't think Netflix properly planned for the year. And there was so much recycled footage. There was so much bullshit where I was like, I just saw this three episodes ago. Why is this clip of Joel?
I thought that was the problem the first season, too. I couldn't even get through the whole first season. But
the first season... Yeah.
Let's get into the Ryder Cup episodes. Let's talk about it. Caps, to your point, and U.S. got dog walked. I can't imagine that just having a camera in all these guys' faces as they're trying to tell a story about how mental golf is and, like, how you have to be so precise and have, you know, your utmost confidence and preparation. And then you have, like, three random strangers that are just fucking video filming you the whole time. Like, that can't be... I don't know. It doesn't feel like that can be a recipe for success. Maybe that's just me being camera shy, but like Zach Johnson calling JT up for the first time to tell him he's on the team and hype him up and get him ready, and there's a fucking camera in your face. You can't tell me that subconsciously that doesn't just, like, alter the way that conversation goes.
No, 100%. Like, knowing that other people are going to hear the conversation obviously changes the conversation. But it wasn't that much different for Team Europe. I just think Team Europe honestly was such an underdog that no one really cared until Friday morning happens and they're up 4-0, right? Like 3-0, whatever the score was. It was an embarrassment. If you're the United States of America and you're going up against a squad that doesn't even have some of their best golfers because they can't, because the European team had standards the U.S. team didn't have by letting Brooks play. It was honestly, like, I remember watching it Friday afternoon and just being like, this is some of the worst golf, to the same point that I made earlier. You have the Xander Schauffeles of the world. Cantlay, for whatever reason, was the one guy that played well. Brian Harman and, like, all of these guys, like, obviously they were in because of the fact that they, like, earned a spot on the team, but, like,
they were only in because, like, they earned it.
No, like
it genuinely was a pathetic performance.
It sucked. And there's four other guys that I could think of off the top of my head who I would rather have as an American captain. Like, Kevin Kisner is a bulldog when it comes to match play. Go to any Dell match play event, Kisner's ever that as well. That's a great point. He doesn't give a fuck about you. Like, he'll hit his shot. There was a clip of him, He hits a shot. He's like dead center of the green or whatever. His playing partner is about to go. The guy he's facing off with, he walks to the green from like 150 yards out, whatever it was, while his other partner's waiting to hit just to mark his ball. And the other guy to just stand there and wait. Like, that's the type of shit you have to do. Like, the best players on the team for the US in the Ryder Cup this year were the caddies, which is hilarious. The caddies did more to fuck with the other team's heads than the US ever did.
Adam, you're 100% right. Like but they haven't won in Europe in over 30 years too. So
I wonder why.
that's just our American spirit in us that just comes in every time we go to Europe, and we're like, we're gonna fuck them up. Have you seen the world golf rankings? We're just way better. But I mean,
That's it.
What needs to
It's
happen?
this.
I think that's why it was such a big letdown, because we're going and
I gotta
everyone's
walk
like, this is
this
the
off.
most
I'm getting
dominant
another beer.
US team. Everyone's like, this is the most dominant team we've seen in our recent history. The European team's got guys like Nikolaj Højgaard and
Yeah.
Ludwig Åberg, and it's just like,
Ludwig
who are these?
Åberg is a beast. He's a
Yeah, he
beast.
is. He agree. He is. I agree. But when you got guys like JT, Jordan Spieth, all those guys going up against him, you're like, there's no way we lose this. And like you guys said, we just got dog walked. It was horrible to watch. I mean, I thought the coolest part of the entire, all the sessions was Saturday night when, Cantlie was getting chirped all day for not wearing a hat. That storyline developed, and then, he finishes birdie, birdie, birdie with that deep putt on 18, and Joe Lakava gets in Rory's face, and then there's that scene with Rory and Bones, in the parking lot. Unfortunately, that was the best part of the entire Ryder Cup, was the U.S. team going like this. It's like nothing really happened, in my opinion.
How about, I love that scene because the guys that were the hotheads were the two Irishmen. You had Shane Lowry off the green at 18 screaming at was it Bones at that? No, it wasn't Bones, it was Lakava.
Lakava.
He's screaming at Lakava and he's like, I'm convinced at that point, like, and Homa even said this in the interview after the fact too. He's like, oh, we're about to fight. Like, this is like we're about to throw hands with Team Europe. And you go from that to Rory turning around, and essentially it wasn't a confrontation, it wasn't an exchange of words, it was Rory speaking at it. And I think speaking is putting it eloquently. Rory gave it to Bones right there, and it was just like, I don't
Bones is the
think,
nicest guy out there.
yeah. And it's
Yeah.
like, it's a Ryder Cup, like,
Yeah.
this is, I mean, it's the best event in golf, not named the Masters. I feel like they completely were like, oh yeah, but the Masters also exist. Like, you want to win the Masters as badly, if not more, than you want to make a Ryder Cup team.
The people that talk about the Ryder Cup as being like their favorite experience, the people that usually haven't won a lot of other big events.
Right. Keegan Bradley.
Right.
So true. Keegan Bradley did get shafted, though. I was upset about
Dude,
that.
What, mommy,
I
daddy,
felt
is something
terrible.
wrong?
I felt terrible for Keegan only because
No.
you realized watching that episode, you're like, oh, like this is actually controlled by two guys.
They
Every
had the
everything.
dinner of Ricky, like literally ZJ, and then it was JT, Ricky, and Steve eating dinner. And I mean, those guys are just friends, and they definitely could have just pulled that footage out of literally 6 months of fucking a season, where at some point they're filming all those guys all year. You don't think the producers are like, hey, you guys should all get dinner and just like talk about the season, and then they position that as it what it is. But
I think two
well,
comments about dinners specifically involving either Justin Thomas or Zach Johnson. The first one, when they actually go into Zach Johnson's home, hell of a shout out to Southeastern Iowa by
you
having
did. You
Iowa
gave it up.
beef ready to go, knowing that they were filming dinner that night in the Johnson household. He had the 12-0 undefeated poster behind him when he was on the bike. The kids knew what was going on. except when it came to like what events he was winning. His one son was more into the Rubik's Cube than I've seen a child be in quite some time. Definitely on the spectrum. I know it when I see it, you know, game respects game. But then the other one was like, was it the first or the second episode where it was like the PGA Championship? And Justin Thomas is like the, you know, returning champion hosting that dinner. And he's like, yeah, also, you know, quick shout out to Mito Pereira. This wouldn't be possible without him. What a stray Mito caught there. Like that dude hasn't, he hasn't ever, and he probably will never be anywhere close to winning an event, let alone a major event as that. And he double bogeys it to take himself out of contention and let three other guys or two other guys go into a playoff. Like, Justin, it was funny, don't get me wrong, but like, you know that Netflix is here, right? Like, you know that every single person that gives a shit about golf or even is genuinely curious is going to watch this with them putting it that early in the season. It was honestly like, it feels the PGA Tour as of right now, especially with the LIV guys leaving, feels like,
it feels high a little daddy.
It's high school. You're in the cafeteria at high school. Every locker room.
It's probably always been a lot more like that than we realized, though. I mean, it's a lot of guys with egos, and they're all hanging out in the locker room, you know, dick swinging contest. That's a good point, Adam.
Good luck competing with Harold Varner III.
My biggest takeaway from, you know, this whole thing is because, you know, we watch these guys a lot on Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, Sunday. Golfers as a whole have terrible hairlines. I've never seen a group of guys that just have worse hairlines. That was my biggest takeaway. Hutch, one takeaway, and then we'll wrap it up here.
One takeaway is I thought Zach Johnson did an absolutely horrible job of captaining that team. Although I do love him because he's an Iowa guy. One quick story: I was at the Masters last year, and he was walking up the fairway, and I remember, you know, Jack, you always tell me how big of an Iowa guy was. He was. I hit him with the I, and he responded with an O, and we did the Iowa chant. So I thought that was sick, but. I thought he did a horrible job of captaining that team, and it was a big letdown.
Yeah, that's the full swing recap. I think we touched it all. We really got through it. Before we go, got one final kind of like send off some couple questions for our guest here. You know, behind him, if you're not watching, looks like he's got 9 different golf courses framed up. Is that right? Is that what I'm seeing?
Yeah, and I was looking at it in the camera. Are those tilted?
A little tilted, but I they're all right. You can maybe readjust at a later time, but I'm sure those are, you know, the some of the greatest golf courses in the world. You've had the pleasure to play a lot of different golf, go to those tournaments, as we mentioned. From a player's perspective, what makes a golf course great? And then we'll follow up with somebody at a tournament's perspective as a spectator. Yeah. But yeah, from a
player's perspective. Player's perspective, you know, a good golf course is just well maintained, you know, edges trimmed nicely, you know, fairways clean cut. And one of my favorite parts about a good golf course is their bunkers, you know, that white powdery sand versus, you know, more that gravelly rocky feel. You know, I think that's the difference between a great golf course and a good golf course is the bunkers.
There you go. Yep. How about the ambiance of the course? I feel like that's a big part. You know, we talked about the Masters. You walk in, it feels different. Any courses that just stand out, they don't necessarily have to be famous, but great clubhouse, great amenities, maybe a locker room that you get to partake in, go into, and they got, you know, the mouthwash that you don't need and everything ready for you.
One of my favorite courses I've ever played was Olympia Fields. Their grounds are insane. You know, the clubhouse, they got the whole nine. I actually got to play, you know, my favorite course in Austin this past weekend, UT Golf Club, where Scotty Scheffler and Mr. Spieth made their names. So that was pretty incredible. Capsh, I'll take you out there soon.
I didn't realize you had connections like that.
I'll talk to you about it later. But yeah, no, Will it was you? Absolutely incredible. Another one of my favorite courses, Torrey Pines. You just walk in, you got the bathroom attendant, or you got the nice paper towels that are like super thick, in the locker rooms. But yeah, no, that's about it.
That's a great review. Now maybe from a spectator's perspective, I mean, we saw TPC Sawgrass. They call it the stadium course, and those last three holes are just like a spectator's heaven. I haven't been to a whole lot of golf tournaments, honestly. But from a spectator's perspective, it seems like you want that bowl situation. You want to be able to kind of, hopefully from outside the first row, you can kind of see into the golf course, see multiple shots, not long walks. Any tournaments you've been to that stand out for that outside of, the Masters, which we've touched on?
Yeah, the best course I've been to, which unfortunately they cut last year, from a pure viewing experience, was Austin Country Club for the Dell Championship. You know, obviously the Waste Management Open is a fun one, just sitting there on 16. I think the worst one I've ever seen, I was not there to witness it, was LA Country Club last year. It looked like all the fans were a mile away. But I think from a pure fan perspective, just being as close to the action as possible is best case scenario.
Absolutely. All right, Adam, before we get out of here, it is March. Is there one team, flipping the switch to basketball, that just has your eye? Because the next time we regroup, it'll be after the first weekend of March Madness.
Colgate.
There it is. Keep your teeth fresh and your picks fresher. Adam, you want to send us out?
First and foremost, folks, Sam Hutchinson, what a guy. Jake Hutch. Jake Hutch. How about Jake Hutch getting the shout out on the pod? That's big time.
Two
That's
of them.
Big time.
Twice.
Yeah. Keep them coming. The man, the myth, the legend. But folks, do us a favor. Whenever you get a sec, right, before tip off here for the first four games start tomorrow, actually. Month out before the Masters. It's a great time of year to be alive. Got MLB coming up. I'll just stop there. But do me a favor and tell your bookie that we say hi.